Sugar, of course, is the foundation of baking. It becomes a liquid, creates texture, and infuses dishes with sweetness. Over the years, many cooks have tried to create bakes using less sugar or sugar substitutes, some artificial, some natural, but with little success. Brian Levy is a pastry enthusiast who was inspired to forge a different path, one that produced desserts that were good and sweet. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
What kind of tinkering in the kitchen led to this desire of yours to crack the code of sweet bakes without any of the usual ingredients that we rely upon for sweetness?
Well, before the tinkering came the idea from having a really sweet fruit, which was a mango, and it struck me that I should be able to make a dessert out of it without adding any extra sugar because it was exactly the sweetness that I wanted a dessert to be. And so I tried making a mango custard out of it because that seemed the most appropriate thing to make texture-wise. And when that worked, I moved on to things like cakes and cookies, and it took a lot of tinkering. I had to try all kinds of ingredients that I'd either never heard of or never used or had never used in the way I was using them.
So maybe just to give us some context, tell us what you don't use for sweetness and tell us a few of the things you do use.
So I don't use cane sugar. I don't use maple syrup or honey or agave or any of the chemical-based kind of sweeteners or mixes of things like stevia with chemicals, monk fruit. I was interested in using the closest thing to whole food ingredients as possible. So fruits and dairy ingredients and even flours that are sweeter and grains and nuts and fermented things like miso paste and sweet wines that don't have any sugar added to them, but that just aren't left to ferment all of their sugars into alcohol.
Beyond sweetness, what purpose does sugar serve in a recipe? So when you took it out, these sweeteners that we're so used to relying upon, what were some of the issues that you found? And maybe share some of your first successes.
Part of it's not just a matter of taking it out, but it's a matter of what I put in, because what I put in inevitably brought things along with it other than sugar. So, namely, fruit in either fresh, dried form or freeze-dried. It brings along with it all these nutrients and fiber and stuff that you don't normally add into a recipe when you're just adding cane sugar. So dealing with those additional, most mainly fiber, was a big challenge. The issue was that fiber in the fruits was sucking up a lot of the moisture. So I took the lead from Rose Levy Barenbaum, who pioneered the reverse creaming technique for cakes, where she coated flour in butter to prevent gluten from developing. And I kind of applied that to fiber, and coating things that contain a lot of fiber in a fat prevented it from sucking up all the moisture in a recipe.
So give me a really specific example.
So I have a blueberry ricotta pound cake. And the blueberry element in that is freeze-dried blueberries. And the freeze-dried blueberries bring a lot of flavor and sweetness, but they also contain a lot of fiber. So if I were to combine the ingredients of the cake as you would with a conventional cake recipe, the pulverized freeze-dried blueberries would suck up all the moisture, and it wouldn't end up being a very nice texture for a cake. So what I do is combine the freeze-dried blueberries with the dry ingredients, the flour, and then that gets coated with butter. And that prevents the fiber in the freeze-dried blueberries from sucking up all the moisture. And you end up with a nice, moist cake texture with a good crumb.
And, you know, when we're baking and we look at the ingredient list, and let's say you're making something that maybe has 2.5 cups of flour, and maybe there'll be a cup of sugar or 3/4 of a cup of sugar. So for example, in that recipe that you just told us, how much of the freeze-dried blueberries are we using?
So it's a couple cups worth. In order to get the sweetness you want for a cake, you do need to use a lot of this stuff. But then I'll amp it up with, so there are also chopped dried figs in that cake. So that complements the flavor and the sweetness. But when you mentioned a cup of sugar in a typical recipe, that's one of the things I always had in mind when I was developing these recipes, was like, I'd really like to think of sugar, cane sugar, more like the way we think of salt. We would never add a cup of salt to a recipe and not think it was crazy. And I would like to think of sugar more as like a finishing kind of seasoning than the way we use it now.
Yeah, it was so interesting. As I was paging through the book, which I found incredibly fascinating, the first thing I noticed that I had to like wrap my head around were the quantities of these other ingredients. Like, you have a recipe for a key lime pie, and the primary sweetener there is a type of raisin.
Yeah, Hunza raisins.
Hunza raisins, which are those kind of goldeny, greenish golden ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just thinking to myself how so many people think of raisins in a very particular way. And like, I have a good friend who calls them humiliated grapes. And they kind of have issues with raisins. So for example, in that recipe, the finished recipe isn't super raisiny, right?
Not at all. So I myself have issues with raisins. I might be okay with them in a scone, but I'm really not a raisin in baked goods person. So for me, it was about the using the flavor and the sweetness that the raisins have. And by the way, the flavor of the Hunza raisins is just a delicious, unique flavor. And so in the key lime pie, for instance, that's a custard, and the raisins get completely obliterated into a puree that becomes the custard. And same for, I actually use raisins in my rice pudding recipe, but they also get pureed within the custard. And you would never, I hesitate to say you would never know raisins are there, because I don't want to shame raisins, but just know that in the cases that I use them in, it's really just flavor and a sweetness thing. And you don't at all get the texture that I think is usually the issue for people with raisins.
You also use nut flours and some interesting starch flours as well to provide sweetness.
Yeah, in my persimmon bundt cake, I use a sweet potato flour, which complements the persimmon flavor. Well, I had to learn about these flours and how much the strength of their flavors, and sweet potato flour can be pretty overwhelming, so I use it very sparingly. And then chestnut flour is a great one. I personally love chestnuts, and they're naturally pretty sweet, so using that flour for something like crepes or cakes is just, it lends itself well to that. And people that are interested in gluten-free flours, it just happens to be one of them.
Well, it's really an amazing book. You did this huge amount of work, and I can't wait to see how people react to it and start to riff off of it. It's kind of like this encyclopedia of a new way of thinking. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you so much for having me.
Brian Levy is a pastry cook who was formerly with Babbo. His new book of recipes is Good and Sweet, a new way to bake with naturally sweet ingredients. We've got a recipe for his persimmon and spice bundt cake with white chocolate ganache on our website. That's kcrw.com/goodfood. Did Did you know that you can find any recipe you hear about on Good Food by going to kcrw.com/goodfood? Those snickerdoodles you heard about earlier? Yep. Last week's Ethiopian collard green stew? Check. The charred leeks and the winter squash and agridulce from Via Carota? Yep. It's all there when you go to kcrw.com/goodfood. So get cooking and let us know what you make. We love hearing from you. You can always tag or DM us on Instagram. We are at kcrwgoodfood. In a minute, sweet potato buns with miso glaze for your Thanksgiving table. Yes, please. Legendary pastry chef Claudia Fleming joins me next when Good Food returns.